This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode about diversifying med schools. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Most medical schools require applicants to take a test called the Medical College Admission Test, or MCAT. It's a day-long exam, question after question. It covers chemistry, biology, physics, and much more. It costs over $300 just to register. This test can become a barrier, and there is a debate over whether it's keeping too many people out. Alan Yu reports.
Molly Marr went to school for theater and psychology. She dreamed of being an actor, director, writer. She had a busy schedule. Her parents could not support her, so she worked multiple jobs to support herself. She was an office assistant, a production technician, and a film projectionist at a campus film center. But in her senior year, she took a neuroscience class to fulfill a requirement, and that got her really interested in science and medicine. She started volunteering at the emergency department of a hospital in New York City, where her shift would start at 8 a.m. on Saturday mornings.
I'm not a morning person, and I figured that if I didn't like it, I would know right away because I wouldn't wake up in time. And I started getting up earlier and earlier, and I loved the emergency department. I loved the people.
Theater to ER can seem like a big shift. She says this is what she liked about theater.
I felt like performance was able to get at something core in terms of humanity that we all share. And I loved that core truth and that it could transcend language and it could transcend even what was going on in your own world. And for that one moment, you're in a room full of strangers and you're transported somewhere together in this shared experience.
She says she also felt that shared experience in the ER, a group of people working together at what could be the worst moment of someone's life. She would help with patient transport, drop off lab work, and talk to patients to figure out what they needed.
There was one patient in particular. He came in several times during the years that I was there, and I got to know him. And I saw him on the street one time. He was also experiencing homelessness. And he recognized me, and he said, "Hey, doc." And he smiled, and he said, "I'm always going to look out for you." And I felt the same care for him.
She graduated and enrolled in a post-baccalaureate program to take several years of science courses she would need for medical school. At the same time, she worked as a research coordinator, as well as three other part-time jobs on top of volunteering at the ER.
And I was okay doing the hard work because I felt like it was for the right reason and I believed in the goal.
She also needed to take the Medical College Admission Test, or MCAT. So she enrolled in a prep class on the weekends and finally took the exam.
What I remember most distinctly about that exam is there was a fire alarm towards the end of it. I remember just hoping that the fire drill would end and that I would be able to get through the rest of the questions.
She scored 28. Her faculty advisors and peers all told her she would need 30. That's out of 45 total possible points.
I was like, I'm 2 points away. I have a lot of clinical volunteering experience. I have great research experience. I'm really passionate. I want to do this. Let's go.
She did a few interviews with med schools, got on some wait lists, but no offers. So she had to take the MCAT again. During this time, one of her research jobs had been grant funded. That grant ended. She lost her job. Her roommate also wanted a new apartment and did not renew their lease. Molly was out of a job and out of an apartment. She moved to Chicago and shared a place with a friend. She had few connections and struggled to find work. She had scheduled to take the MCAT again, but now she was no longer in New York and needed to take the test soon to stay on top of application deadlines. She looked around for test sites that she could get to quickly and take the test in time. The only one she found was in Oregon. She scraped together money for a cheap flight and hotel and flew to Oregon the night before the exam.
And I did not even think about time changes and what it would mean to like fly in the night before and try to take an exam the next morning. I was like, no, I want to sleep more. Please let me sleep more.
This time she got 27, 1 point lower than the first time. She did not bother applying. She took the MCAT a third time in Chicago, where she was now living. She got a 29, 1 point higher than the first time.
I was one step closer, and I felt that, you know, I'm really close to that 30 cutoff. I had a lot more research experience. I had a publication, and so I went for it.
She applied to schools that talked about having a mission, thinking perhaps those schools would focus on her experience and less on her MCAT score. Two interviews, wait lists, but again, no offers. And now she had a looming deadline. The science courses she took don't stay valid forever, and she could not afford to pay more tuition.
There was kind of this clear end coming up, and I knew I was going to try one more time, and I didn't tell people because pretty much everyone had given up on me at this point. It's interesting. So the first time you reapply, people are like, that's great. You're tenacious. You can do it. Fight for it. It's great. You're so resilient. And then the second time you reapply, people are like, well, you know, maybe if you're struggling with this exam, you're not really meant for medical school. Maybe that's a sign. You know, go ahead. It's kind of worth trying. And then by the third time, people just don't support you, right? All the conversations I had during that time were about what my plan B was. What are you going to do instead?
But she was not ready to give up. She moved back to New York. She could not afford more prep classes, so she studied on her own, took the MCAT a fourth time.
Did phenomenal on verbal. I did phenomenal on the biological science section, and I tanked the physical science section. And so despite having two sections that were in the 95th percentile, I ended up with an overall score of 29. So no better, not even 1 point better. I was so bummed. I was so upset.
But she knew this was it for her. Her coursework was expiring. She had to apply with this score. Finally, schools offered her places. She is now in the sixth year of an MD-PhD program.
I don't normally share the whole story because there's a certain amount of shame about not being able to do it, right? I feel like surely if I work hard enough or try hard enough or keep trying, I should have been able to do better. I felt like it was a reflection on my intelligence.
Molly has thought a lot about the MCAT. She said it was a financial barrier. Taking the test was expensive, and she could not afford a lot of prep courses. She was busy working to pay for her education. There's research that backs up what Molly says about the financial barrier, and it comes from the Association of American Medical Colleges itself, the AAMC, the organization responsible for the MCAT. Their own research shows that in the past three decades or so, more than 70% of medical school students come from families that in 2016 terms made more than $74,000 a year. So let's take a step back. What is the MCAT supposed to do? The AAMC told me that people apply to medical school from all kinds of backgrounds, all kinds of schools. The MCAT is supposed to be a standard way to make sure people applying to medical school know all the science they would need to succeed. Because how else would they know what a 3.5 GPA means from one school to another? They sent me research showing that an MCAT score predicts how well a student will do in medical school in terms of coursework, other exam scores, and graduating on time. But the vast majority of medical school students graduate on time anyway. And there's also research showing that students who get into medical school on a parallel track, without taking the MCAT or other pre-med requirements, do just as well. I heard from medical students, faculty members, who wonder if the MCAT is useful enough to justify having this expensive, extremely stressful barrier to medical school.
Having a high test score is not synonymous with being a great physician.
Amy Oxentenko is the chair of internal medicine at the Mayo Clinic in Arizona.
You know, I've seen learners who are fantastic at test taking. You know, they get some of the highest scores on these standardized tests, but if you then put them in a real life scenario, you might have a student who scores very high who just does not perform well clinically or bedside at all. And on the other hand, I've seen people who have low test scores who are phenomenal physicians. So I just don't think it's predictive.
She worries that the MCAT isn't the great equalizer it's supposed to be. Instead, she's afraid it keeps people out who can't afford expensive prep courses that cost thousands of dollars. Inhinia Henao is an associate professor of medicine at Yale. She said she still remembers one student who has a PhD in biomedical engineering and wanted to apply to medical school a few years ago. This student took the MCAT, did not do well, took out a loan to pay for review courses. She took it again and still did not do well.
That student stopped pursuing medical school. There are so many students like this student who, after a while, is just saying, this is not going to work out, and they give up. That student with a PhD and able to perform in a competitive way on the MCAT is now not a physician, specifically because of that test.
Two researchers working with the AAMC, the makers of the MCAT, published an analysis. And they argue that because of structural racism in the US, a barrier that keeps out the poor, like the MCAT, would also keep out historically marginalized groups. They explain there's nothing in the content of the exam that keeps out particular groups. Rather, they say the US has a long history of policies that discriminate against people of color, like housing segregation and differences in access to good public education, which leads to more disparities in terms of what schools people can get into. I took that to Javaro Russell, Senior Director for Admissions Testing at the AAMC, the group that makes the MCAT. He says he understands this argument.
As an African American, I recall as even a young boy looking at my test scores from state tests and wondering, you know, what was different about me that I wasn't performing at the higher levels of those state tests.
But he says that's not the fault of the test.
A useful way to consider this is thinking about the MCAT as a thermometer, measuring the temperature. We do not critique the thermometer because of the weather. Rather, we adjust our conditions to obtain comfort. The MCAT reflects the educational achievement of those interested in medical education. Unfortunately, structural racism in this country has adversely impacted opportunities to achieve for underrepresented minorities in medical education. But instead of addressing the complexities of providing more opportunity, it's much easier to blame the test, or in this case, the thermometer, for telling you what the weather is.
He says even if you took away the MCAT, people who have resources and means, people who have privilege, will always find ways to get ahead, so you might as well have more information. In a strange and kind of tragic way, the pandemic created an ideal natural experiment. Some medical schools, including Stanford and the University of Washington, did not require the MCAT in 2020. Which means a few years from now, people can study the graduates of those schools and figure out, are they worse doctors because they never took the MCAT? And if they're not, then why do we have the MCAT to begin with?
That story was reported by Alan Yu.